the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure. Oh, glory, glory, oh, glory, glory.
Hands to the heavens, no man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtapositioning us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, his spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walk through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots, we on the ground, the camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up.
One day.
Good morning. Welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You know my voice already. It's Levin Miller. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for letting me join you. I don't have a clue what you do at 11 o'clock. But whatever it is that you do, I'm happy that you're doing that do and that you decided to do that do with me. They are in the House of Assembly this morning. I am advised the Prime Minister is on his foot. I'm advised he's communicating his government's intention. I am also advised that they intend to be bold, that they intend to be brave, that they intend to be new and to be exciting. And for whatever it is worth, I know that the Progressive Liberal Party obviously did a very good job scanning or screening the dictionary for adjectives, right? But I believe if they're going to have an effective 5 years, that this is going to be an administration worth anything, we have got to move the ideas beyond the point of adjectives and move them to action words, verbs, or to adverbs, right? And it's because bold cannot just be a descriptive word. We actually need it to be a tangible word. So when you say to me you are going to be bold, it means that we are going to have to look toward a sovereign wealth fund, but not the pie in the sky one, where everybody wants us to go after this invisible gold mine that's known as aragonite that is somewhere seeping off into the ocean, into the abyss, where no one can actually really see, feel, and or touch it. When we say we're going to be bold, we're not talking about being able to collect taxes the way that we've collected them in the past. As a matter of fact, we may be talking about the doing away of taxes in an effort to spur and or spin off activity in the economy. When we say we're going to be bold in the way we do our administration, people like me are crazy enough to believe that we could use our gross domestic product as a part of the sovereign wealth fund. Yeah, you all borrow money to the tune of $788 million. In each administration, you borrow up to $4 billion. You only are allowed to borrow that money because, or as a direct consequence of who we are, which is the Bahamas, because of where we are, which is at the baseline of one of the greatest consumers on the planet, and because of what we're able to do, which is generate finances. All of those are consequential to the point that we are the Bahamas. And because we are the Bahamas, because we are located where we are located, because we generate what we generate in GDP, that ought to be something that every Bahamian benefits from directly. And of course, I'm not talking about large sums of money. So no, I'm not ever going to tell you a plan that's going to put $100,000 in your pocket. But if you talk about a country rich in natural resources, right? The question becomes, what all is a part? What all makes up? What does my natural resource comprise of? Because I argue, right? We have the fisheries product that I don't think we are maximizing, and I believe we ought to nationalize in a way that ensures food security. We have the fauna and the flora that I don't think we're nationalizing in a way that I think provides food security and stability and economic capabilities. I personally hear people all the time telling me some nonsense about me going and making a backyard farm, and I can't figure out how is that going to in any way be sustainable. What I do know is that in my one yard, there are 4 mangola trees. Every year, I waste about 1/2 of every mangola that is produced on that tree, because let me just tell you this, I almost 40. I ain't climbing no tree. If I fall as the sole breadwinner in my house, do you know how many people starve because I wanted a mangola? Makes no sense to me. And so I have to wait until they drop on the ground. And when they drop on the ground, largely they go to waste. All right? And so we've got to think about, if we're going to be bold in the way we approach administration, how do we nationalize the Mangola product? I look at the people that sell pears on the side of the street. I laugh. It tickles me pink to see people trying to sell avocados. Why? It makes no sense. Why do I say that? Your avocado tree is going to bear so many avocados, I assure you that if everyone in your house ate as much avocado as they possibly could, one, you're going to run out of toilet paper, and two, you're probably still going to have avocados. Literally, the tree bears so much that you could just give them away. I don't know why you'd be trying to sell something that has the shelf life of about 4 days before it now becomes a nuisance on your hand. We've got to figure out a way to nationalize that. We've got to figure out a way where the BAIC, or, you know, the favorite pitch point these days is the PPP, right? Everybody is talking about public-private partnerships. How do we engage public-private partnerships in a way that says, you know something, all of the avocados in this country will be sent to the BAIC, and we're going to give you $100 for your tree each month, every year, for the rest of your life. As long as you have an avocado-bearing tree, every month you could go to the bank and there's going to be $100 there with your name on it, courtesy of the Bahamas government. And when people sign hotel deals, we're going to be able to tell our guests that the avocados, the mangoes that are on their tables came out of Bahamian yards. You couldn't get it more farm to table than that. But see, we suffer from this thing that I call intellectual myopia, where if you do not do it in the lines and columns like they taught you in some classroom somewhere, then you're doing it wrong. They argue, economists that I trust, of course, have argued that we ought to approach this from the view that the lender has the power to lend money to the people in Caracas. They're not lending that kind of money to anybody anywhere else in the world. They are lending it to us because of who we are. And the population of this place makes up who we are. So when you and your friends go inside the little room there to beat on the table and borrow $4 billion, I believe that I ought to get 2% of it as a citizen of this country, and so should every other citizen. These are the kind of bold and brave, and you can't just use these adjectives. They have to be tangible. They have to be action words. We have to be able to quantify them. And when I do those kind of things, I bring smart people, because I'm not a smart guy, and so I want smart people to help me and let me know whether or not I'm living in La La Land. And so I brought Lester Cox. Lester Cox, good morning.
Hey, Levon, it's always a pleasure to be in your company, my friend. And as always, you always... You're challenging us to just think out of the box.
That's all I ever want.
Or certainly think in different boxes.
Yeah, that's all I ever want people to do, Leslie. You know, I hear this administration. I believe they mean well. They obviously intend to be a bully administration. What do I mean by that?
Why bully?
They got 28 members in the cabinet. Every single time the prime minister walks out of the cabinet office, he comes with the legislation in his hand. There's no debating this.
Right.
Whatever he walks out of that room with in his hand, it's now the law.
Yeah, but don't forget now, we've seen that now for almost 30 plus years, starting with Penland. Mm-hmm. Then it moved to Ingram, Christie, Menace, and now Brave. So essentially what has been happening in the Bahamas is the executive really, once they decide something in cabinet, mm-hmm. they know, hey, Parliament is just, you know.
Agreed, but I don't know if we could say that we've ever seen it at, I mean, this is just 28 of them, 22 in the cabinet and 6 parliamentary secretaries.
Right, but I mean, you know,
the government's agenda is the government's agenda.
True. I mean, we've seen Gassima cabinets before. Mm-hmm. And it's also important now for, you know, the civil side of our country to really step up and be ready to protest and to have your voices heard. It's critical.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking big ideas this morning, Lester. So I want, you know, you're a smart guy. I'm a student of Prince William, right? So let's see if we bunk some of this stuff back and forward, if we can get some of it to stick. We invite you to join in with us. The numbers are 323-6232, 325-4316, and 325-4259. You can text me, because that's usually the best way to get in on a show that Lester and I are on, 422-4796, okay? So now, I'm thinking, Lester, with what's happening in the world right now with regards to food supply chains, in a short while, January, February, maybe March, a lot of the things that you love to eat will not be around.
All right. Let's say you need short supply.
Yeah. How are we addressing that as a country? I believe that there needs to now be, we need to now look at people like Mr. Clay Sweeting, who is now the Minister of Responsibility for Agriculture, Fisheries, and Family Island Development, needs to look at. Should we now be looking at the government of the Bahamas either subsidizing fishing industry or purchasing all of the marketable valued fish so that anyone that's doing fishing on any commercial level understands that 30%, 40%, 60%, whatever the amountage is that the government decides, the amount is that the government decides. What did I just say, amountage? The government has that secured. It's in its coffers. They store it however they store it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The government can actually now use that as a means to, one, food security, and two, to ensure that fishermen have a level of subsistence in their finances that is kind of reasonable and easily quantifiable and easy to manage, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Why do you think things like that? Do you think things like that are going to pop up in this 5 years?
I doubt it. But I mean, it needs to, because at the end of the day, the way the Americans deal with food security is around grain and wheat. Mm-hmm. And so what they do is they store it. So those are storable products. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see if the government... I don't think any fishermen in the Bahamas have any problem selling their catch. Mm-hmm. Right? You put your product out there at the right price, you're going to sell that. Storing fish in terms of food security is interesting. And that's certainly something to think about.
I look at what people like Alaska are doing, right? Like, right. Alaska has its stone crab industry, right? Mm-hmm. And the stone crab industry, I think, generates something like $2 billion a year or something. Wow. For the Alaskan economy. And literally, the fishermen every year, they go to sea, and they pay for tonnage.
Right.
So you know that I need to bring in 10,000
tons. Once you arrive back, you know there's a market for your catch.
Correct.
And I mean, the government could do that. I know the seafood place here, on Gladstone Road, BFS, mm-hmm. that's one of the things that really got them to be a huge company. Mm-hmm. Whatever you catch, you bring it to them, and they're going to buy it.
Right. But are we? Should we now not be looking at this one thing being a monopoly and something that is more nationalized, right? So that the government can now, because we say our sons are not being skillful enough, not well trained enough. Most of the boys around here can't swim. God help them.
Can you imagine that, living on an island?
Yeah, God help them if they got to take a conch out of the shell, right? But if you do it the way that I'm thinking, which is a nationalized fisheries industry, you end up, now the government can justify investing in training skilled divers. The government can justify in training skilled navigational scientists. The government can justify training people in fish processing, etc., right? And what I think it does is it, again, provides steady revenue for the fishermen, opens up a new industry for export for the Bahamian government.
And you get cheaper food.
And provides food cheaper for the people on the ground. So no longer will I spend $80 on a grouper, right? Because
can you imagine the cost of a nice snapper? It's so ridiculous in this country where we are surrounded by water. Mm-hmm. We've got a lot of flats. Mm-hmm. So the Bahamas should really be, unlike you, I don't think we should be out in boats trying to catch fish. Mm. It's like being a hunter today. Mm-hmm. Which what we want to do is we want to be into organic fish farming where our waters are already pretty low, so we can farm grouper, we can farm snapper, we can farm conch. I think that's what we should really be focusing on. Mm-hmm. But we're not thinking about that.
But well, and it's because I don't know if that is exactly how our culture is designed, right? Like, Bahamian fishermen, for whatever the reason is, they like to go to God Ocean.
Yeah, they like, right? to catch it.
Right, and so I mean, I'm not asking them to change the way they do it. I'm asking them to consider, or I'm asking the government to direct, because that's the job of the government, a new way of going about it. Everybody, so Lester Cox is a snapper fisherman, and he only catches snapper, and right. He does so on a national level for the government of the Bahamas, and he is to secure 10,000 pounds of snapper a year. Right. Levin Miller is a lobster fisherman. I don't catch grouper. And if I get caught with it, I get penalized for it.
Right.
Because I'm a lobster fisherman. I go out there.
So
I
you
catch
focus,
lobsters,
you got your skill.
And that way, the government of the Bahamas could say, every year, we, unless God stops, we are going to land 100,000 pounds of the, which now gives us a
baseline.
Right. And we're able to export that value. Right. I could say to countries like China or wherever, I'm going to give you 1 million pounds of crawfish a year. Why? Because I got 100 fishermen who each have a 10,000 pound quota or whatever the
right.
quota
so,
is.
You know, unlike you, I don't believe we should export none of our stuff. If you want Bahamian lobster, you got to come here to get it. If you want Bahamian snappers, you got to come here to get it. That's how I see.
But that would only affect 7 million people a year. When the planet is made up of 7.8 billion right. people.
Well, if you have the demand, then go ahead. But I'm thinking
exclusivity.
Right, fish and conch mm-hmm. should be the baseline of our diet. Versus now, our diet is probably baseline. Probably chicken,
corned beef. You saw the fight about that.
I hope not.
So I'm thinking about that. I think that is one of the things.
And that's a good start.
And I believe that is a good place to start.
Which I'm also thinking about roots like starches. I mean, you know, like we should be like self-sufficient in say cassava, right? Well, we in any given year we produce enough cassava. If there was an emergency, Bahamians will never run out of starch. Mm-hmm. We'll never run out of seafood, right? That's how I think about food security.
Well, you know,
or sweet potatoes. It doesn't matter what it is.
But and so that takes me to my next idea, right? The next idea I have is Lester Cox has a yard,
right?
Bahamians have this god awful asinine idea that you need to live on 100 by 100 pieces of property.
Isn't that ridiculous? You and I, we mini street boys, so we know when we were growing up, people live in yard.
It'll
you used to have like four families in one
yard. Seven houses in that yard.
Correct. Right. Well, if I remember correctly, I think you all had a house by yourself.
We had a house,
right, and then a yard by yourself.
No, we had four other yards, and then there was like an adjacent yard that we inherited.
All right,
we adopted that yard space.
I got you. but typically, you would have four families on a 50 by 100 space.
Right, and that's not what happens these days, right? The young people have gone off to law school. They became
big
lawyers.
Shot.
Yeah, and the people tell them, you know, in order to be a real lawyer, you need to live on a piece of property 100 by 100.
Right, or to be happy, you need to be in Prospect Ridge. And we've conditioned our people in such a way. I mean, we had a nice house on Mini Street.
Yeah.
But there came a point in independent administration where it became fashionable to move Michael Road, move Garden Hills, move Soldier Road. And we just left the areas like Mini Street.
Right, but what I'm thinking in my mind, Lester, is this, right? So, for instance, I live in a yard where there are four mangola trees. I'm telling you, I don't touch them.
Why?
I've
you don't like mangola?
No, I've eaten mangolas. I mean, out the wazoo now. Like literally, the stuff comes through my nose. I've had enough of it.
So why don't you freeze it?
I don't care how you fix it. I want none. I don't want none. Right? But every year, I pay one of the local neighborhood guys to come and rake this stuff up out of my yard. Could you imagine, right, if the government of Bahamas said to me, Levin, I'm going to give you $100 per tree. See, because if you're going to talk sovereign wealth, see, when people like Prescott Smith and them talk about sovereign wealth fund, my good friend Haji Black, they keep talking to me, Lester, about some stuff I can't see.
Yeah, deep stuff.
Yeah, aragonite in the middle of the ocean, falling off into a cave, creating a hill in the I can't see that.
Right.
I'm a see, touch, and feel kind of guy. Let's fix all the small problems. And then we'll get to the big problems, hopefully if they still exist. I have four mango trees in my yard. If the government of the Bahamas agreed that, you know what, as a part of our national food security program, as a part of our national food enhancement program, I'm going to pay you $100 a month for each fruit-bearing tree in your yard. That would mean I would end up with $400 a month that I didn't go to work for, right? And the government of the Bahamas will send a picker or they may require that I put them in a box and bring them to their weighing station. They will weigh them, you know, like how when you deposit quarters in the bank.
Right.
They will weigh them, pick out the good ones, the ones that can't go to market, they will discard them, and they will pay me for the tonnage if that's what they desire to do. But I like flat rates because flat rates are easier to work out, right? So what they can guarantee is that every year I have about 1,500 spoiled mangoes in my yard, right? But that benefits nobody. They don't go back to the earth. They don't do nothing but go in the garbage. We should be benefiting from that because I guarantee the same is to be said about the fruits in your yard. The same is to be said about the avocados in my uncle's yard. And no one eats this stuff. The population isn't big enough for us to eat every single avocado that is grown in the
And you put it right. My neighbor have an avocado tree that swings in my yard.
Mm-hmm.
And when they ripe, you know, you have some nice tuna and grits, but that's it.
Yeah.
There is no way to organize it in such a way where you can have it over time.
And this is what I'm saying. So, you know, people say, okay, how do we get the Bahamian citizenry engaged in a way where they feel like just for being a Bahamian, and this kind of stuff happens in Alaska. This kind of stuff happens
Korea,
right,
around shrimp. So you've got people with small shrimp farms in the back of their yard. And when you add up all the small shrimp farms, you've got enough shrimp for everybody.
Correct. And so we have the demand for it, right? Like we have two of the largest hotel properties in the hemisphere, right? We literally could say to them, hey, all of the this, and this, you will get from here. Imagine what you will do to the tourist experience if when they come to the Bahamas, they get a dilly based sauce out of.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, the dillies that come out of your yard. And as a Bahamian, the government of the Bahamas, just like how they send the garbage truck around, right? Sends a truck around.
You pick it up.
That collects the fruits. And as long as all you do is log into the AIC system, say that I am a fruit bearer, right? Put your information in there. BAIC, because we have to make sure it stay manual. The humans and technology.
Don't yeah.
So BAIC, send a fella in a white Sentra in a reflective jacket that say BAIC. He come to your yard, verify that there are four mango trees there. Boom. Now they check the bearing cycle on your trees. And as long as you live on that piece of property with those four trees, money comes to your account every month.
And we got the technology to do it. We're seeing people doing that exact same thing around marijuana plants.
Yeah.
In certain places in America, they have sensors on these marijuana trees.
Mm-hmm. But it requires no effort from the citizen. The citizen literally does nothing.
Right. But it requires good leadership on the government's part and requires a bigger thinking about how you think about the agricultural sector.
And so when I hear an administration say things to me like they want to be bold, they want to be brave, they want to be big, they want to be new, I'm thinking you can't still be talking to me about tourism. You can't still be talking to me about tariff collection. As a matter of fact, Lester, here's my third prong, right? My third prong is I think it's time to remove tariffs at all airports of entry. They make no sense. When I come out of Walmart, I plan to lie to the little gal I meet sitting on in the customs uniform. I plan to lie to her.
Right.
Including the $500 exemption.
I got you.
I come
and
here.
Most people do.
I come here to lie. Jesus allows me 2 lies every year. That's when I come in June, so LBI.
So you go away twice a year to just shop?
I take the 2 free ones they give me, right? And then Jesus has allowed me 2 lies. So I travel about 4 times a year. So I have enough grace in my grace portfolio to lie twice a year. And I save them, because I don't like to lie. And the only time I just do it is when I lie to the little girl from customs.
I got you.
Right? But if we consider what we spend in manpower to have a woman sit there and wait on me to lie to her, it makes no sense. It makes no sense. We already import almost everything in this country. You will still get me when I use the seaports, right? You will still get me when I use air cargo. So I will still not... evade you on any
well, that's
real
fine.
Level.
We certainly can look to see how much customs we take in from the airport, and if it's not significant, then you could eliminate it.
But again, every dollar saved is a dollar earned. When we consider what it takes to run the operation,
correct,
just to have her there waiting on me to lie,
right. So you do an analysis, you check it out.
Right, we could literally move that and simply make this a checkpoint for contraband if you want to do that.
Right.
You just come to America Airport.
But I mean, you're still fine with paying a little tax
to fund
the government.
I'm fine with paying. Again, when I ship TVs, I can't bring them on the plane.
All right.
But I don't understand the purpose of me trying to hide stuff in my bag so the girl from customs don't see it, right? Just so I don't have to pay $7 or $9. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, nothing significant.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. And so I think maybe... Like, and I think small things like this make the way people live, the expectation of their life, so much better that they vote for you forever and ever and ever. Because although very small the changes, right? What you find is people now say, "Man, when I come to the airport, that was so easy. Girl, I just come, I bring my bag, put them on the little scanner, they check it, make sure no weapons was in it, and boom." I walk right out. I had to tip the fella from customs. I think customs officers make a whole lot more money than the Bahamas government does working at these airports.
Right, yeah.
It makes no sense.
Maybe we need to do that analysis.
But
you're absolutely right. We've got to start to think about everything again.
Yes.
So really, a minister shouldn't just be prancing around in the government car. He should be thinking with guys like you and me and other people. That's really a part of the job.
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you said about rethinking, right? Because I think one of the fourth prongs in the way we do this new administration, this new government, this new layout, is there needs to be. Hubert Ingram built these roads, is it 15 years ago now?
A while.
About 15.
It got him fired, yeah.
But some of them need to be revisited at this point. Like we need to revisit Market Street and Robinson Road and figure out if that makes sense there, because it doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense because because those two roads killed so many businesses. how we have the roads organized, we need to just really rethink it.
We also need to rethink roads like Prince Charles. If you think about Prince Charles in the area of the old cable Bahamas, right?
Right.
Every time I have to drive that way, right? Jesus has such a sense of humor. I can't duck it. I have to go that way, right? But if you realize, they made the sidewalk and the grass area so large that it's literally the same size as the two lanes of road.
Can you imagine?
And then you run that two lanes into an awkward four lane that then turns back into an awkward three lane with one of the lanes obstructed by a bus 78% of the time.
Right.
So you have one of your chief centers of commerce, the Marathon Mall, sitting in the most god-awful little hodgepodge
right.
scenario.
You've got to be smart to get there.
You need a navigational license to do this, right? A driver's license, the logo would help you. But we've got to think about how do we create an ease of movement along the metropolis, because if people can move freely, if they can move easily, they will stimulate the economy.
It greases commerce. And look here, I have a son who goes to SAC, mm-hmm. and navigating that exit from SAC is very dangerous. And, mm-hmm. and all of those side roads coming off Prince Charles, they are very dangerous. Mm-hmm. But I don't think anybody who is at the Ministry of Work, they obviously don't drive around in the Bahamas. Like if I was charged with organizing these silly sidewalks that we do on both sides of the road, I would think about it differently. And I mean, like, yeah. you can put sidewalk on one side of the road.
Yeah, yeah.
Why don't you put a bicycle and walking lane on the next side? I mean, people just be just not thinking. Look at that whole Cable Beach strip from Fish Fry all the way down to, say, Blake Road.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've got a median in there that's just wasted. You can turn that into walking trails, biking trails. I mean, we can do so many things in this country, but we are not really thinking.
It is because I don't think that the job is to think. Like, the job is to stay out of scandal. The job is to go to as many funerals as you can and take nice pictures. Like, that is what I have surmised the role of government policymaker in the Bahamas. Like, can
Man,
you tell
we've
me?
Gotta, we've got to get
you're
it
slightly
bigger
older
than
I am.
We've got to get it bigger
what
than that.
What has been the new thing since NIB? What have we created new since the creation of NIB?
No new institutions. Well, I would imagine, well, two things that I could think about. Probably national health insurance. Mm-hmm. And VAT as an important, as the most important funding mechanism for the country.
Mm. I don't know if I'm impressed by any of those. I think I hear.
I'm not saying to be impressed, but I'm just saying those are two institutions that was created. Mm.
So I think we got to think about big, bold, and brave ideas, right? We can't just let the PLP get away with using it as tassel. They're going to have to actually show us what it means when they say they're going to be big, bold, and brave.
Right, and we also have to remind them. What was big and bold in our history? So when you come back from the break, mm-hmm. I'll share with you like four or five things that was really big and bold. And we've got to compare whatever the New Day guys are saying in the context of those bold things.
They've either got to match it or eclipse it.
Correct.
All right. Don't go anywhere. I've got Lester Cox in here. He's a smart guy. I'm talking to a smart guy this morning. We'll be back after the break.
COVID-19. Do not panic. Be prepared. Stay informed about local COVID-19 updates from trusted and reliable sources. Wash your hands regularly and be sure to have hand sanitizers readily available. Keep your surroundings clean and disinfect all surfaces that carry germs. Talk to your family and friends about protecting themselves and staying healthy. For more information on COVID-19, check the Ministry of Health's website at www.bahamas.gov.bs/health and the Bahamas Ministry of Health Facebook page.
This message brought to you by Bahamas Ministry of Health in conjunction with Guardian Radio.
Hey, did you find the show interesting? Do you want to be a part of the conversation? Well, sponsor Unleashed today. Call 302-2304 or 302-2375 to see which package is right for you. Join Lavon Miller as he ignites the passion of the next generation by bridging the gap with engaging conversations and innovative ideas. Take action and sponsor Unleashed today at 302-2304 or 302-2375 and be unleashed.
Loss of family members is very isolating, and people who have experienced loss appreciate when others have shared their grief. If you can't be there in person, go to the Nassau Guardian's website online at thenassauguardian.com and visit our obituary link. The Nassau Guardian's interactive obituary link allows you to read the funeral announcement, express condolences, or place photos on the online guestbook for one full year. Losing a loved one is painful, but that pain isn't the worst thing to happen. Friends, loved ones, colleagues, and neighbors who ignore the loss compound the pain. Should the bereaved family wish to place the obituary and photos on our obituary site, just contact the Guardian's funeral industry partners or the Nassau Guardian. Remember, there isn't one magic right thing to say to someone experiencing loss that will make the loss less painful or easier to bear. The Nassau Guardian's obituary link, available online at thenassauguardian.com.
Thank you so much. Welcome back. Levin Miller is here. It's Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. That means it's somewhere between 11 and 12 o'clock. And then that means I'm unleashed on your radio. I'm here with Lester Cox. We're talking big ideas because according to the Prime Minister's communication team, he was finalizing this morning the final pieces for his communication for a bold and transformative change that will bring immediate relief. I like the way they word these things, right? I know chief among them is the discussion about the reduction on VAT. Still not a fan of that. Still not a fan of that. As a matter of fact, y'all are probably going to hang me. They could take VAT to 15% if you ask me, because I like round numbers.
Yeah, see, obviously you could afford it.
I know, I like round numbers, Lester. I think this bunch of awkward numbers.
Well, I mean, 10% is the perfect number because you know that's a church number.
No, 10% is decent, but, I think about shortfall, of course. Without any schematics at all.
Well, the shortfall is only going to be probably be $50, $60 million at that when you factor in, and I mean...
The increase in spend?
In fact, if you factor in the increase in spend, it may be insignificant. So they may be able to keep it at 10%.
I don't know. We'll see.
But we will see.
But for whatever it's worth, I think if you say this thing works well, because what VAT does is draw a certain amount of money out of the economy so that the government could have it to use, right?
And consistent income for the government. That's important.
The thing I like most about it is that the government don't pay a dollar to run it, right? Like it literally self-runs. So if you're telling me that works, I wouldn't touch it. I would leave it, right? There are so many other things.
But the 10% was a part of the whole campaign game. Engaging people.
I know. And a lot of people around here promise some women some things before they marry them, and now they married to them and they don't get them things.
No, but let me next up. Levin, I think politicians make a huge mistake that they don't understand. Mm. You see, the outgoing administration, the Minister administration, the 2017 campaign really was about three things, you know. Mm. It was about where the VAT money gone. Mm-hmm. It was about corruption. Mm-hmm. And it was about freedom of information along with a new approach to governing. Mm-hmm.
They got an F.
Correct. The Minister administration paid no attention to the campaign. So when they won, what was the first thing they talked about? And every government makes the exact same mistake. The only one who didn't make that mistake was the Hubert Ingham 1992 government. What did they do? Oh, we got to go pay bills. We got to fix the economy. So they start off borrowing money, pissing people off, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. You know what Ingham did? You know why Ingham was probably the only two-term government in our country? Mm-hmm. You know what the first thing he did in 92? He did three things that nobody ever talks about. The year before, Pinnon had increased cabinet minister salaries. So when Ingham came in power, he immediately lowered them. Mm-hmm. The second thing he did was he allowed radio stations. Mm-hmm. And the third thing he did was he had the parliament in the square. So that endeared him to the people. Mm-hmm. What every new government do? All they do is go borrow money, talk about bills, and what the other government then do. If I was a part of this new day administration, you know what would be the first thing I'd do? Yeah. I'd establish an office of the people. Where when you contact our government, like if you write the prime minister right now, you'd get no response.
No, I agree with that. And I've often said that the prime minister's office needed a minister of state for research and redevelopment. And what do I mean? People with ideas can actually write the Prime Minister's office.
And you get a note.
There is a team of people mm-hmm. that review your idea and says, this could work in the Bahamas. Bring Lester in, let's talk to him.
Correct.
And yeah. Lester don't need no special person to get him
right.
in the door.
Don't bastardize. You know what most politicians do? They take your idea and they just mess it up, mm-hmm. right? So as far as I'm concerned, writing the Prime Minister is not writing the government of the Bahamas. When you write the government of the Bahamas, that should be an office where this correspondence is tracked and measured.
Right.
Any important law firm, when you send them a piece of correspondence or you fax them, there's somebody who's recording that.
Yeah.
Right? We don't do that. I mean, you could write our government, you get no response. It's an embarrassment to me. The second thing I do along with this office of the people, you know, we have office of the spouse. Mm-hmm. So I mean, we can make them anything we want to.
Right.
we're the people, right?
Uh-huh.
When you get a certain amount of petitions, you can actually force a debate in parliament, right? This is how you bring the democracy closer to the people. If the PLP were to do something like that, that's something that's bold and big and it's totally different.
Mm-hmm. Can I tell you what's coming out of parliament? I just got this. This is sort of the press. PM vows to increase public service pensions. The prime minister said effective December 1st, 2021, pension will increase as follows. For 742 people receiving less than $500 per month in monthly pension, they will receive an increase of $100. So you will be getting $600 a month. For the 2012 people receiving more than $500 but less than $1,000 in monthly pensions, they will receive a monthly increase of $75. And for the 4,432 people receiving a monthly pension of greater than $1,000, they will receive a monthly adjustment of $50, which equates to about $600.
All right, right. Yeah, people hurting, obviously.
Yeah, but again, I don't. Hey, we could clap for him for 2 seconds on this. I don't know if this is big, brave, and or bold. I don't see big, brave, and or bold when I think about increasing the public service pensions for people that have largely served in government in a secure job for 40 years.
Right, but I mean, that's the only thing? I mean, what are the things
That's all I've seen so far. In a non-contributory pension, right?
Right.
Literally, that money comes out of the public treasury.
Right.
So I don't know if I'm ecstatic about it. I get it. You want to bring relief to people. Sure. And of course, we've heard him say that they're going to reduce a VAT. We'll see what that looks like. So I guess if you give somebody $600 extra a year and then reduce.
Yeah, that's like an 8% bump. But I can tell you, if the PLP don't do the 10% VAT thing, that's going to be a problem.
Absolutely.
Just like when the Minister administration raised VAT, that began their downfall.
Yeah.
I tell you though, when we think about bowl in the Bahamas, let's talk about our history in terms of bowl, right? So we've had party leadership in the Bahamas for 65 years.
Right.
So bowl under Sir Roland Simonet was, We're gonna give you internal self-government. You can have Constitution Day, woman suffrage, and we can change the money.
Mm-hmm.
Those are big consequential things,
mm-hmm.
right? Under Sir Lyndon, you had majority rule,
mm-hmm.
you had independence, mm-hmm. you had all the important institutions, national insurance, universal education,
College of the Bahamas,
all of those mm-hmm. things. Those were consequential things.
Mm-hmm.
Then I think. We just stopped doing consequential things. We did nothing bold. The boldest thing we did after Sir Lyndon was probably radio stations. And that's really it.
So what I often say is that Sir Lyndon Pinling was the prime minister of institutionalization.
No question. And independence and majority rule.
Right. Hubert Ingham was the prime minister of infrastructuralization.
No, I won't go there. Because you see, you can't say that because when you think about infrastructure in the context of the Bahamas,
electrification of the family island, the building of roadways, the building of docks and facilities. So Hubert Ingham actually built the city.
No, I you can't say that. I would say Hubert Ingham accelerated some of that in the family island.
Massive Project Landing, yeah. Atlantis, breezes. I mean, of course, some people argue that they were fire sale giveaways, but
it doesn't matter.
But they were, in my mind, in the 90s, equivalent to what Mr. Christie talked about in the early 2000s about anchor projects, right? Like breezes and sandals and all those things predominantly turned out to be anchor projects. Mm. Regrettably, they put 4 anchor on 1 piece of land and caused gentrification, right? But the fact is that was needed at the time. Mr. Ingham landed that radio stations for us to come and kind of, you know, tell of our grievances. That right. was also Mr. Ingham, which
right,
was his.
Right, right. Ingham started wider. thinking about running government better,
mm-hmm.
But he really there was no institutions established under him, far as I could see.
And I think Christie is going to be bestowed with the revitalization of what the Bahamas was. So
I think Christie, when people think about Christie, Christie is going to be the third most consequential prime minister in the Bahamas.
Absolutely.
Because he did health insurance, mm-hmm. and VAT happened under him, because VAT is now probably the most important funding mechanism for our government. I think Absolutely. We get about almost 40% of our income from VAT.
Agreed.
So Christie and urban renewal. So Christie is going to be above Ingram in overall context. So it's going to be Penland, Sir Roland, Christie, Ingram, but I don't know what Davis is going to do, but that's how things shake out right now.
So I believe Lester, and I wanna throw this last one in there, because you're a bit of a financial guy. I think, right, whatever the government of the Bahamas decides to borrow, for as long as they decide to borrow it, mm-hmm. right, I think that if we're going to start talks about sovereign wealth, right, I am a person that believes geographical location is one of the things that should be factored in when you consider sovereign wealth. Right?
I know how you feel. So you would say establishing a sovereign wealth fund would be a new institution. That would be if the Davis administration, I mean, we already have the legislation for a sovereign wealth fund. Mm-hmm. If we were to do that, you would call that an important institutional development.
Yes, but I'm not. But I want to be very clear about this. I'm talking about the Chikchani catching
or no, I know
that
what you
stuff.
Mean.
I'm talking about real, actual, tangible things that we see every day. All right? So you say to me, the government of the Bahamas is going to borrow $788 million, right?
Right.
I'm not saying that that's what they're going to borrow, but I think that's what they borrowed at one point under the Menendez administration. Right? So $788 million, the population of the Bahamas will appreciate 2% of all the borrowing that we do, because we only borrow based on our GDP, and guess who makes up the GDP? You, right?
Right.
And since it's you that's generating this money earning capability, since it's you,
but 2% of this all right,
percent of everything we borrow is going to be deposited onto an account at the sovereign wealth fund, and whether it is in 3-year tranches or 5-year tranches or 2-year tranches,
yeah,
we pay out whatever that accumulated amount is.
Put that in sovereign wealth fund
to all the citizens 18 and older.
I got you. And for the most part, the problem in the Bahamas is all our borrowings is for salaries and nonsense, for the most part.
Precisely. And so and for politicians to self-aggrandize.
Yeah,
right?
To waste money.
Right. So because the prime minister wants the legacy bill, he goes and borrow one pot load of money and fritter it away and then say, oh, look at what we did. Nobody wanted this. Nobody cared about it.
Can you imagine that?
Right. And so if you're going to do that with the money that I have to pay back in any event, and if the reason we're able to borrow is because of the GDP.
Because of me, yeah.
And if the GDP largely exists because of me and because of where we are.
Let me have some of that.
Then right. Some of it ought to directly affect me.
Well, I mean, it's going to require a different kind of thinking, but I get you. And you should also, seeing that you want that, you should also add, every time you borrow some money, you need to put something against hurricane relief. Because at the end of the day, we're going to have a hurricane hit the Bahamas every 2 years. There's no question about it. I mean, that's just, if you just track the history of hurricanes in this region and the Bahamas, mm-hmm. every 2 to 3 years, we're going to be hit by one.
Mm. Well, this is a lighthearted moment. I thought as long as Christie was in prime minister, we were safe. Because apparently, no, I'm serious. Every time Mr. Christie has been prime minister, we've had two. Christie can't duck them, right?
Wow.
Mr. Christie is the two hurricane prime minister. Every single time. It's gonna happen to Christie for sure.
Can you imagine?
Francis and
Jean. Can you imagine you have two hurricanes? Or I mean, like Minnesota had some seriously bad luck. He not only had a major hurricane in two important centers, Abaco and Grand Bahama, mm-hmm. but he also had a pandemic.
Mm-hmm. But and you know, we could sit here and cry for him if you like.
No, I'm not crying for him.
But this is what I tell people, Lester. The reason why I elect a government ain't because I want them to do nothing easy.
True.
I want my government to go there and work a miracle. I want you all to have wonder-waking power. Go
That's
out
right.
there, turn water into... I don't care what you do. Go out there and turn water in. Don't come...
But isn't that the job of leadership, though?
Precisely.
At the end of the day, you are not a good leader if you don't outperform the assets you were given. That's really what we ask leaders to do, you know. Mm. This is why we fire coaches in the NFL. Mm. When your team is not winning, we fire the coach first,
mm-hmm.
because the coach is the one who sets the whole context of mm-hmm. leadership. And so leaders have to take the game how they find it.
So right now, I think, Lester, one of the things we also need to be looking at is the decentralization of New Providence. I think COVID...
Yeah, no question about it.
I don't think COVID was the Achilles heel for the Menendez administration. I think the lack of thought during COVID was the absolute ideal situation to decentralize this country.
I'm telling you, boy.
We missed that completely.
But I think politicians miss it all the time. The only people who really know when the government is going to change mm-hmm. is the opposition. You know why? Because the opposition is the only one who really listening to the people. Mm. When the people give you the reins of power, what do? You go and listen to your friends. You listen to yourself. And that's it. You stop listening to the people.
But I'm not even sure if you listen to your friends, because according to many people, you know, the former administration didn't really listen to anybody, just the little green man.
No, don't mind that. Politicians always listen to a couple people.
Many of the people
themselves, the group, and they listen to the people who fund them. There is no, don't mind, ministers listen to the people who pay them bills, mm. who pay for them rallies.
Let me see if I can get a couple of these text messages in, Lester. This one here says, Levin Cassius Short said to don't do business with the Chinese, each Bahamian should go individual in partnership. Chinese don't do small tuck shop loans. Well, how do you feel about the Chinese, Lester?
As far as I'm concerned, the Bahamas is on America's third border. Mm-hmm. If you invite the Chinese here to do anything, that should be a strategic position. So the Chinese ought to pay a price mm-hmm. to be on America's third border, because that's important to them. Mm-hmm. America, their number one trading partner. We on America's third border, so that is an edge for us, and we ought to be very careful how we position the two superpowers in the world, because when you invite the Chinese here at no cost, it's a big time advantage for them. So we have to think about how we deal with them.
I don't see what all of the pandemonium is about. The Chinese got plenty of money.
Correct.
The Chinese
and the Americans go to them for the money as well.
Yeah,
so money is money.
The Chinese is like the little fella through your corner who used to be a drug dealer, and your mommy them know he was a drug dealer, and everybody know he's a drug dealer because he ma was poor and he pa was poor, but this boy got plenty money.
Hey.
And she keep telling you, don't talk to him. What you mean, don't talk to him, mommy? The boy got plenty money, right?
Correct.
And so sometimes, you know, your eyes ain't get in the car and go for rides with him or anything like that. But if you meet him out at the bar, you let him pay for the drinks.
No question.
Yeah,
and the Chinese are not afraid to spend.
They're not afraid to spend.
What we've got to be careful about, though, is the context of the business. So for instance, if I were doing deals with the Chinese, mm-hmm. we would be doing specific kinds of deals. Like, we would be doing deals around fish farming, for instance. Not necessarily, we won't be doing deals around them farming, them fishing in our waters. We would not be doing deals like that with the Chinese.
I'm not even scared of deals like that, Lester. If the Chinese is going to tell me that they're going to buy me a fleet of 10 boats, like I tell you, I want to move towards a nationalized fishing product, right? Mm-hmm. If the Chinese tell me, leave it, I'm going to buy you 15 fishing vessels and I'm going to have a 20% or 30% share in this company and I don't intend to do nothing, I'm going to stay in Shanghai, and you're just going to send my 20% every year to me, I don't have a difficulty with that.
But you also have to think about sustainability. All you have to do when you deal with people, mm-hmm. you just look at their environment mm-hmm. and see what's going on in their environment. Mm. If they're fishing in their environment in a way that's unsustainable, mm-hmm. that destroys it, mm-hmm. they're going to do the exact same thing.
I don't intend to let them fish. So my idea when I think about the Chinese is a trifecta, right?
Right.
I think the Chinese makes an investment.
And I'm not saying that that's what they'll do, but I'm saying you've got to be very strategic in terms of what you do.
So the Chinese makes an investment. We allow them to hold 45%. The government of the Bahamas, as the government of the Bahamas, is going to be a partner in all businesses with the Chinese, right?
Right.
So the government of the Bahamas retains, I don't know, 40%, right? So that they don't have majority control.
Right.
But the remaining 15% of that company goes to the Bahamian people in an IPO. So that at any point the government need to snatch this back, the government absorbs that IPO, tell the Chinese, hey, Yao Ming, lady.
Yeah, you're just doing business.
Yeah, and I think what we ought not do is this patty cake negotiation we like to do. When you go to negotiate with the Chinese, understand this is a blood sport. All right? And don't come in here trying to make friends. You don't come here for the tea. You can't send the minister who just so excited to be in the room. No, you actually got to send the fella in there with the ratchets and to ratchet down the nuts and bolts to ensure that we walk out of this. The Chinese feel respected, but at the end of the day, we make enough money that if this thing goes left, we don't care. And two, so that the Bahamian people are included in this in a way that they feel like owners, because that is what matters, ownership by Bahamians.
Correct. Ownership is correct. But don't be afraid of the Chinese. There's nothing to be afraid of.
Oh, yeah, no. I tell you, don't mind. They like the drug dealer boy to your corner. He's got plenty of money. Take a drink from him at the bar. Anyway, that's my time. Lester Cox, thank you for coming.
Always a pleasure, Levin.
I'm Levin Miller. It's Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, the station for fresh news and smart talk. Don't move. The news happens now.
Hands to the heavens, no man, no weapon. Formed against, yes, glory is destined.